testimony. I don't know if everybody's had a chance to read it or not, but if they...
I tried. I didn't get through.
You know, we kind of have them, because I think they're just going to hinder the witnesses. I mean, you know, do you want me to just say, can you summarize your testimony for us, kind of, as a starting?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that would be good. Thanks, Mitch.
I'm going to open the record here. This is the Consolidated North Dakota Public Service Commission hearing on the comprehensive settlement of all open issues of NSP, DBA, Xcel Energy before the Public Service Commission. The consolidated case number is PU-12-813. My name is Pat Ward. I'm the administrative law judge designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings at the request of the Public Service Commission to serve as procedural hearing officer for this consolidated hearing. This hearing is on the application of NSP for a comprehensive settlement of all issues pending before the PSC in cases number PU-12-813, PU-13-706, PU-13-707, PU-13-708, PU-13-742, PU-13-743, PU-13-194, and PU-13-195. The record will show that it is a little past 8:30 a.m. Central Standard Time on Thursday, January 23, 2014, at the PSC Commission Room, 12th floor, State Capitol, Bismarck, North Dakota, which is the time, date, and place set by the Notice of Filing and Notice of Hearing issued by the Public Service Commission on December 16, 2013. The notice of filing and notice of hearing for this issue, for this hearing, specified the issue as whether the settlement is reasonable and should be adopted. At this time, I'd like appearances. First of all, for NSP, Mr. Zimser, who's here representing the company today? Mr. Zimser, would you state who's at council table with you for the record, please?
Zev Zimser, Briggs & Morgan, on behalf of NSP. With me is Ms. Carrie Valley, Associate General Counsel of Xcel Energy Services, Inc., on behalf of the company. Ms. Valley will be performing the direct witness examinations today.
And is Ms. Valley a licensed North Dakota attorney?
Yes, Your Honor, and she's been pro hac vicee'd by the administrative law judge presiding over case number PU-12-813, as well as PU-13-706, 707, 708, and 742.
Any objection to Ms. Valley participating in it?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Okay. She will be allowed to participate in the hearing.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Norell, would you state who is going to be present on behalf of advocacy staff for the commission and any witnesses that are at table with you that might testify?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Ryan Norell, attorney for Public Service Commission advocacy staff. And with me at table, at council table, would be our witness for this particular hearing, Mr. Mike Diller, and also Sarah Cardwell, who was the main advocacy staff witness in case number 12-813.
And is it your intention that either Mr. Diller or Ms. Cardwell will ask any questions of any witnesses today? Or
Not at this time, Your Honor. Okay.
Mr. Armstrong, would you please state your appearance for the record and anybody else that will be participating in the hearing?
Yes, Your Honor. Mitch Armstrong, Special Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the commission in all of the listed cases. With me is Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco, also attorney for the commission. Patrick Vaughn and Jerry Leon are staff on the various cases. We don't expect them to ask questions. If they do, they'll filter them through counsel.
Thank you. Now, before we begin, any opening remarks from the commissioner? Chairman Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Excuse me. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. And Xcel, yesterday we all sat in those meetings downstairs, so I appreciate everybody doing that as well. And got a good team lined up again today. This seems like we've been doing this for a long time, and we have been. And I hope we're getting to where we're ready to make it vote here pretty soon. And so there's a few questions that I would have today. I think a lot of those I asked in the informal that we had, so I don't think any of those should be a surprise. I don't have any particular concerns about the wind projects, any particular concerns about the gas projects that haven't been answered. I'm still stuck on the three-year deal. I'm still leaning. I like the idea of a one-year something and 0-0 going forward. And so if you could maybe focus on your willingness to adjust that, that would certainly be helpful today. And I look forward to a good hearing. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Good morning, everyone.
Don't have a lot to say starting out this morning, but I do want to again thank the advocacy staff and the company for all the hard work that went into this settlement. You guys really went through kind of one by one and addressed a lot of the issues that were outstanding in the rate case. And a few of the big ones still kind of reign supreme. The demand allocator being one of them for myself, and and then the 3-year terms of the, well, 4-year term of this and the consecutive rate increases. I want to learn more today about the investment cycle that you're on and what would justify those increases down the road. So other than that, I look forward to the rest of the deliberations this morning. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman.
Thanks, Your Honor. I think everything that is in question is known, and I'm ready to get started.
Thank you, Commissioners. I'm looking around the room. The room is quite full today. Looks to me like most of the people present are either here on behalf of the company or on behalf of the commission. But if there is anyone present other than witnesses for NSP or the commission who will or may want to testify or comment regarding this matter today, would you please raise your hand? Okay, so it doesn't appear that there is anybody at this time. We'll give that opportunity again later after the company presents its case. Mr. Zimser, any opening remarks at this time?
No, Your Honor. We would expect to call our witnesses and have them answer commissioners' questions.
Okay. Mr. Norrell, any opening comments?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Zimser, you can call your first witness.
The company calls Mr. Dave Sparby.
Mr. Smarby, I think maybe you've been here before, but I'm required by law to advise you of the penalty in North Dakota regarding perjury. That penalty is up to 5 years in prison, up to $5,000 fine, or both. Having been advised of that penalty, will you please raise your right hand to take the oath? Do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Zimser.
I defer to Ms. Valley.
Thank you, Judge Ward. Mr. Sparby, do you have an opening statement today?
Yes, a very brief one. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Dave Sparby. I'm the Senior Vice President for XL Energy, responsible for the operating companies. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in favor of the settlement this morning. I want to thank the staff for their very large contribution and its completion. I think the settlement provides a reasonable framework for resolving the issues in the case. It fairly balances the interests of the parties. It's enforceable and moves us significantly in the direction of implementing North Dakota energy policy. Now, I'll be glad to answer the questions I can about the agreement. We have additional staff members that can answer more detailed questions. And with that, I look forward to a good discussion today and urge the commission to consider its adoption. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. This witness is available for examination.
Okay. Mr. Norrell.
No questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Sparby, we do have your pre-filed testimony in the record already, but I do want to ask you a few questions about that and maybe have you summarize from your position with the company why you believe the settlement should be approved. So let's start with, what is your position with the company?
Senior Vice President of Xcel Energy.
What do you do in that position?
I'm responsible directly for several administrative functions, regulatory, legislative, and the like, and then have matrix responsibility for operating functions.
In that role, why do you think the settlement should be approved?
Well, the settlement provides an orderly process to resolve many issues that have been a concern of this commission in the past, like some of the PPAs, for example, that have been adopted. It also provides an orderly process to resolve other issues like the demand allocator. It balances the interests of all the parties concerned in that it allows for study periods as well as final adoption by the commission. So I think in a very comprehensive fashion, it pulls together a lot of stakeholder input. it allows for some discussion amongst the parties and ultimate approval by the commission.
And how, I take it from your testimony that you believe the settlement is fair for NSP's customers and for the company.
That's correct.
Why? Is it, or is it just the same thing
well,
you just said?
Two of the most basic reasons. First of all, it results in reasonable rates for customers. Second of all, it moves us in the direction of North Dakota energy policy in favor of the mandates of the North Dakota legislature.
You heard the commissioner's comments at the beginning. Commissioner Colquitt mentioned he was concerned about the increase 3 years in a row and then
yes.
No increase in 2016. And Commissioner Fedorchuk also asked about wanting more information on that. From your perspective, why is the tiered, if you will, 5550 rate increase appropriate?
Well, the company is spending approximately $1 billion a year replacing plant and also adding plant across northern states' powers jurisdictions. You know, at a very high level, the revenue requirement associated with $1 billion of investments, about $110 million, you're about 6.1% of that. You know, when you look at what our operating and maintenance expenses are, they're roughly between $1.2 and $1.3 billion. Using that same allocation, of course, this is at a very high level, but certainly justifies the type of change in rates that we're talking about. Now, bringing that down to more plant-specific projects, I know this commission has seen testimony with respect to the uprate as well as the life cycle management project at Monticello. We've talked about the steam generator replacement as well as the life cycle management project at Prairie Island. A significant amount of transmission being added across the system, as well as efforts to both refresh our distribution system and address many other projects the company has ahead of it, like cybersecurity concerns. And those are, at a very high level, the basis for the 5% increases.
With the structure of the settlement, a 5% increase
yes.
for 2013, 14, and 15,
yes.
is it why couldn't it be an increase in 13 and then no increase in the latter years or some other formulation?
Well, as a practical matter, you know, accounting requires that we recognize earnings in the year that we receive them. And yet, if we were to receive all the earnings in 1 year, of course, we're still going to be required to finance and operate in those later years. So, I mean, if there was a commission's mandate that we go back and try to look at something like that, we can. It's just not a framework that would work well. And it's largely dictated by both accounting and other requirements.
Without the settlement, do you know what the anticipated plan is, at least for NSP, as far as filing additional rate cases in, say, the next
well,
4 year period?
Well, we kind of cut through this current investment cycle around 2016, at which time rate cases should be very consistent with the level of inflation, whatever that is at the time.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions from the commissioners for
Judge? Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
I should appear on behalf of the commission on the rate case because I was assigned as commission counsel on the 813 case, and so I didn't make that appearance when we first went forward. Mitch was assigned for all the other cases and then added to the rate case in order when the settlement was imminent. But I would like the opportunity to ask a couple
Absolutely.
Of questions related to that.
You may.
Mr. Sparby, are you the witness that will be responding to the staff's, Mike Diller's suggestion in his testimony, which I believe is at the end, his alternative to a demand allocator issue where he goes into it on pages 9 and 10 and and says one of the reasons he's bringing it up, even though it's late, is to get the company response. Will you be providing the company response?
The company response to the settlement?
Or, no, to the suggestion in Mike Diller's testimony on pages 9. I believe it starts on page 9.
You know, I apologize.
Is that right, Mike?
Yeah. Is this his settlement testimony?
This is his testimony filed on the 17th. Right.
Setting a fixed share of generation assets.
Pardon me?
I didn't look at these things, I apologize. But I didn't know, being that you're the big guy here today, I
did wonder if you had any response or if you're deferring that to someone else.
Is that page 9?
Starting on page 9, yes. An alternative, the third alternative, as Commissioner Hagan used to look for always in his decisions, to the demand allocator issue.
I guess I apologize. I'm not entirely sure what other alternative Mr. Diller proposed. I can respond generally to the issue of 12CP.
I think what he's saying, and I'm going to oversimplify here, and he will get on the stand and correct me when the time is right, but what I think what he's saying is figure out a percentage, a number, 5, 7, 2.5, whatever it is, and just apply it. And don't participate, so to speak, in 12CP, 1CP, or any other CP.
If I understand the question, I mean, we need to derive a methodology as a starting point for future proceedings, and also for the commission to measure our earnings in this proceeding and in subsequent rate changes. So I see certainly some value in adopting this process and this methodology for this settlement, knowing that we'll be filing enough information for the commission to continue to evaluate the reasonableness of this allocation, as well as perhaps move to others should that be the decision.
So I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but are you basically saying that could be one of the ideas that goes into the study?
We're going to look at all the ideas consistent with the settlement, yes.
Okay, well, I had a concern with the settlement proposal in that regard with not including upfront other jurisdictions. And if you subscribe to the theory that it takes a lot of work and some investigation and research to come up with the truly correct allocator, if you're going to deviate from the default allocator, then I have a hard time saying or thinking that that can happen without your other jurisdictions being involved. So why is the company not including the other jurisdictions in that research project and that study from the beginning?
Well, I'm certain we will at some point consult the other jurisdictions. This study, of course, is on a relatively quick time frame. I mean, it would be very difficult, I would think, for us to assemble all the jurisdictions and develop consensus by July of this year. But certainly,
I agree with you there.
We will consult other states.
But if the process was started, I mean, I agree with you, it would be hard to get everybody to the table.
Yes.
Hash it out and develop consensus by July. But I'm more concerned about those people not being at the table in the beginning and it being perhaps a waste of 6 months because we don't have them at the table. So is the company willing to bring them to the table even if the timeline has to be extended? Which I have no authority from the commission to offer that, but that's my thoughts.
Of course, the company has no ability to bring sovereigns to the table, but we certainly will bring this to the attention of our other regulators.
But will you suggest that it be a joint effort.
You know, I think what I'd like to do is bring that back and talk with our team about it. I certainly see some advantages in including other regulators in that discussion. You know, I just really haven't had a chance to talk about that with the team. Certainly, we've got ongoing rate cases and other, other proceedings elsewhere that wouldn't fit as well with this timing. But certainly, because it's a multi-jurisdictional allocator, they'll be at least consulted at some point. Yes.
That's all I have at this time.
Before we go to questions from the commissioners, is there anything, Ms. Valley, that you want to follow up on with this witness?
Thank you, Judge Ward. I'll reserve my questions for maybe I could go proceed with one now, just to resolve Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco's issue on the study. Mm-hmm. And as you indicated, Mr. Sparby, the study is on a short time frame.
It is.
And do you see the study as providing a baseline document and the start of ongoing discussions both with the North Dakota staff and potentially with other jurisdictions?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sparby.
Mr. Norrell, any follow-up to that?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Armstrong?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
If it's a baseline document, which I hadn't thought of that term, but I recall it from the informal, what do you envision as the time frame after that, the baseline document being due in 6 months, for getting to and implementing the correct jurisdictional allocator, whatever that may be?
I would imagine that process could be anywhere between 4 and 6 months to follow, just depending on how much subsequent analysis is done on that.
So realistically, the commission can kind of consider 2014 as a year with the default allocator, and if there were to be a change, it would probably take effect in 2015.
Well, that would be to come to, of course, conclusion with respect to what North Dakota's interests are. If we're going to consult and work with other states, that's going to be a longer process. I think, as you may remember, we actually did this in 1983 and pulling together the five states and the Federal Energy Commission and coming to agreement on an allocator was a very, very significant task.
Well, fortunately, I don't remember that.
Oh,
that was
okay.
A little bit before my time, but you're dating yourself there.
I will say.
But you've piqued my curiosity. Is there a final document from that process?
Yes, there is.
I would love to read it if you could submit it,
yes.
Please.
The North Dakota Commission was a signatory. It's the 12CP that we apply between the jurisdictions.
I think it should. I mean, if there's no objection, I think it should be part of this record because I'd like to see what happened with who and how they arrived
at
this conclusion.
When I say signatory, I mean all the jurisdictions came to an agreement. Actually, I was the signatory. It's agreement between NSP Minnesota and NSP Wisconsin. And what we were what was required of us to have this adopted was all the state commissions as well as the FERC had to agree to its reasonableness.
But did it just apply then to the interchange or whatever you call it, the federal issue between the two companies as opposed to the retail?
Well, the
retail
states, of course, were, it was important to them to ensure that the method that we applied between the companies was consistent with their methodology, or you'd certainly have inconsistency in cost allocation.
Okay, so... And this is educational for me. Are you saying that if the all the commissions perhaps agreed to a different methodology, there would then still have to be a federal approval? You know, the flip side of that.
Well, the federal approval starts at of course the level of defining costs for the company,
right.
And the allocation of costs between companies is FERC jurisdiction.
Right, and I had thought that it didn't matter. That part didn't matter to us, just that they didn't have to necessarily coordinate. I understand that ours start with whatever Wisconsin doesn't get as far as costs. It, you know, the Minnesota company's costs is where we start.
Yes.
But I thought I heard you saying just now that it, that there was some dependency. FERC had to sort of approve what we do, and we sort of have to approve what they do. I thought
I think FERC was very happy to stand back and allow the states to come to agreement on the allocator to be used. Certainly, FERC has some guidelines that will apply if necessary, but this was ultimately a settled matter.
Okay. Well, I'll be interested in reading that final result.
Yes, we can get a copy.
Thank you.
I'm going to go now to questions from the commissioners, and then I'll give you an opportunity to follow up on everything. This is Commissioner Fedorchak's portfolio, I think. Do you want to go first?
Sure.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Morning. Thanks again for being here. Okay, so you piqued my interest as well with this discussion on the 1983 process.
Yes.
So can you step back and just kind of give me an overview of that? Tell me again what it was, what triggered it. And just sort of set the stage for that. I'll read it when we receive it as well, but I'd like to get it more, the foundation set in my brain a little bit now.
Okay. There's several ways to allocate costs between affiliates, and some do it through a standard power supply agreement. It would look like, for example, Minnesota would sell NSP Minnesota would sell NSP Wisconsin 100 megawatts of energy, and we would price that. And that's what, for example, that kind of format is what Elite would use in selling to Minnesota Power Wisconsin. Because NSP Wisconsin sells power to NSP Minnesota, and NSP Minnesota sells power to NSP Wisconsin, what we did was, and this is a general term, did a cost-sharing agreement. So we look at what investments were made in Wisconsin. We look at what investments are made here, and then apply a load ratio sharing to ensure that each company pays the appropriate revenue requirement for the investment made. Now, an allocation factor must be applied to that investment, and the 12CP method was the one that was adopted.
Okay. And so what would a changing of that allocation factor used within the states within NSP Minnesota, how would that affect that?
Well, what it would do is depending on if there was a change, it would either bring more cost to Minnesota or it would bring more cost to Wisconsin.
Okay. All right.
And then from that, we would allocate down to individual jurisdiction.
The way the settlement is set up, we do this study, as I understand it, we do the study on the allocation factor this year, and then it doesn't take – whatever is found in that study doesn't take any effect until a future rate case. And if we adopt the settlement, there won't be a future rate case until after 2016.
Correct.
Would the company be open to any sort of process that might have the study completed and the allocation factor implemented prior to a future rate case? Have that be part of the terms of the settlement?
Well, at this point, Commissioner, I mean, the settlement is a comprehensive agreement to both some costs and benefits. And I think without either side knowing what the commission would adopt, it would certainly, enhance the agreement for one side and detract from the agreement on the other. Mm-hmm. Now, if the commission wanted to request the parties look at any additional terms or conditions. I mean, certainly the parties would come back and consider that. As I have stated, however, at this point, the agreement we've offered is considered as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My other thought on the allocation study is that it's driven, it's all driven by the company, and it feels like it would be more less biased, perhaps, if there was a third party involved. That's another piece of the, you know, terms that I'd like to think about moving forward, having some sort of a third party involved in that study so that it's not has a little bit more meat on it from in terms of impartiality. So just throw that out there for now. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the build cycle. You mentioned it, looking at completing it around the year 2016. So until then, you feel like the company has had a fairly consistent increase, 7.4% in 2007, 8.37% in 2010, another 1.23% in 2010, and then it's seeking three more years of 5%. 5%. Tell me, how do we justify that to our customers?
Well, Commissioner, I think we've provided in the work papers the very detail of the plan additions that we've made, and I know we've talked about this at a very high level, but you know, I think customers understand in the 60s and 70s, states like North Dakota as well as Minnesota and South Dakota grew very fast. I think Cass County had some decades that grew at almost 20%. And a lot of the infrastructure as well as the power supply the company built at that time is now 50 and 60 years old. Certainly some of the plants that we licensed, like the nuclear plants, have 40-year licenses. And the infrastructure at that point needs to be looked at and refreshed. Infrastructure for failure for us is not an option. Electricity is required by our customers. And we're moving along a very prudent path to life extend, refresh, and replace that infrastructure where it's prudent to do so. And we do have in the work papers both the projects as well as the cost estimates associated with them at very detailed levels.
Is it largely the refreshing of the existing system? You mentioned earlier that you are also adding plant, which I'd be interested in hearing you talk a little bit about that, considering that your load is not growing. So what are the additions and what's driving those?
Well, we're required, we're adding, for example, IT, cybersecurity improvements, some plants, additional pollution control equipment's been required. Nuclear in particular is an area where over time the NRC has seen fit to have licensees add significant additional equipment. I'm sure the commission is aware events like Fukushima, for example, has caused the NRC to rethink the operation of several plant processes and make improvements and additions.
Yesterday we had a day-long discussion here on carbon regulation. Do you feel your company, obviously you don't have a crystal ball, so I recognize you can't completely predict here, but if there's a major new federal carbon regulation, should customers be prepared for significant additional changes beyond 2016. Does that kind of change what you'd be saying today, or do you expect that you're pretty well positioned?
I think the investments that we've made provide a hedge against those future regulations. NSP is probably one of the very few companies that has about 50% of its megawatt hours carbon-free. So it's a very significant hedge that we bring to the table against future carbon regulation.
Okay. Oh, and has NSP ever signed on to such a comprehensive long-term, say, four-year settlement, or is this new ground for you?
No, it's recently agreed to a three-year settlement with the Colorado Commission. So, in fact, it's not real ground. I think it's worked very well there. I think we agreed to it a little earlier in the process, so probably the look ahead is about the same as with this agreement at this point. But I think the Colorado Commission would say, yeah, that agreement's worked pretty well.
What risks does the agreement provide or carry for your company? There seems to be a lot of certainty that you get with the three consecutive 5% increases. What are the risks that you see?
The risks are certainly that costs are going to increase faster than we expect, that sales will decrease faster than we expect. So there's certainly a significant amount of financial risk for us here. We also, of course, have agreed to several other processes as a part of this that we're also going to have to manage, including the restack provision of this agreement, which imposes potentially significant risk on us.
How would you compare the risks, your risks versus that of the customers?
I think the risks are significantly tilted towards us.
How so?
Well, I think that the chances of not seeing a decrease in the restacked portfolio is not likely. I think what we've shown you is that the rate of return that we expect in 2016 is in that 8 to 8.5% range, which would certainly not be acceptable to investors. And even when you look to 2013, the rate of return we agreed to is below the national average approved by other regulators. So it appears to me that the risks taken as a whole, as reflected by the agreement, are certainly on us and as reflected by our rate of return.
So why did you agree to this?
Well, it gets at a lot of longstanding issues that we think we need to agree with come to agreement with the staff and the commission on. Certainly there's a value to us in the certainty of the agreement over time and the resolution of these issues in an orderly fashion.
Okay. Thank you. I don't have any more questions.
Chairman Koch?
Thank you, Your Honor. Excuse me. Thank you, David, for coming out today.
Thank you.
Let me understand one more time. Do you work directly for Ben?
Yes, I do.
So I'll make a commitment that I still have not been down there yet, but I obviously won't talk about cases, but I need to get down and, if possible, to get a meeting of you and I and Laura and Ben and just sit down and just talk about state energy policies in a very candid, direct manner, because this issue is not going to go away.
Well, we would look forward to that.
Because, it's very easy. I've been out, Dave Gooden, when he was here, and now Frank, they're right here in town. You just run into these guys and gals a lot more, so I think there needs to be a better dialogue, and I'll take ownership of that. So maybe on the break, Laura, we can sit down and figure out something that'll work. That'd be great to get that on the schedule to just start having some general discussions because, step back just one more step. The challenges that keep emerging for North Dakota are things that I'm trying to better understand in Minnesota. You know, why Xcel Energy has a 30% renewable and the other companies don't. And so I talked to friends of mine that are legislators over there from both sides, and I said, how does that work? Is that because Xcel wants a higher renewable? And his answer was absolutely not. It's retribution from some legislators that don't like your nuclear portfolio. I mean, what would be your answer as to why you have 30% and not, like the other companies, a lower number of renewable as your mandate, if you will, out of Minnesota?
Well, Commissioner, I think that, and it's hard to speak for a legislature.
No, but what would be your answer? Why do you think you have a higher number?
Well, I think that...
You've been around for a long time.
I think that many well-intended legislators actually see the opportunity with these renewables. I think that they see the opportunity that we were able to realize with this last wind purchase where we expect to actually save customers.
No, but Gabe, just to the point, why do you have 30% renewable and the other investor owns don't have 30% in Minnesota? Why did the Minnesota legislature give you 30%?
Between 30 and 25?
Yeah.
Well, the difference was at the time the mandate was passed, we already had like 700 megawatts of wind in place, and they wanted to level set all the utilities, if we were given credit for all the wind that we had in place.
Okay, so you were not given credit for the previous investments, so they pushed a higher number?
Well, what they did is we got some. They just wanted to have it closer to a level set so that they could kind of keep the utilities, various utilities, somewhat in sync.
Because it's one thing to have different policies between North Dakota and Minnesota and South Dakota, but then when I dig deeper and then there's different policies inside Minnesota yet for XL Energy, it makes it even harder.
Yes.
As a regulator.
Is reflective of the investments we had made.
Okay, fair enough. So the competitive bid process, once again, I didn't know about that, the first couple rate cases, because it never came out as an issue. And then now in this case, it's certainly come out as an issue. But then I dig a little bit deeper, and Otter Tail doesn't have a competitive bid process, and they're a Minnesota company as well. And once again, you're the only company that came to light that has the competitive bid process for generation. How did you guys get nailed with that when the other companies don't have to do that? That doesn't seem fair.
Well, frankly, I can't speak to Otter Tail's regulatory history. Certainly,
wouldn't you agree it's not fair if different investor owns have different standards inside their own state?
Well, if that were the only consideration, yes. I mean, I think that all investor-owned should have a level playing field. Yes, I agree with that.
So when you make your pitch to the legislature, you don't win when you go into that position?
I guess I don't know that the resource acquisition process doesn't apply to Otter Tail or Minnesota Power. I mean, in my recollection, I can think of at least one.
I don't know about Minnesota Power, but I do know about Otter Tail because they're an investor-owned that we regulate, and I've had that discussion with them.
Yes. And so I guess all I can say is I know it applies to other IOUs. If there's an exception for Otter Tail, I'm not aware of it.
Okay. And this is just all in the backdrop of trying to have a decision in North Dakota that understands the complexities that you operate in Minnesota with a company that works in several jurisdictions.
Yes.
And it goes back to the questions that Commissioner Fedorchak was asking about 12 CP and 1 CP, and it's a very complex issue. And I look, in my mind, you have transmission policy, which is states get together and figure out what transmission policy needs to be, and we all figure out a cost allocation, and many folks before me were heavily involved in that. And when, as Alana, our attorney, was talking about all these states being involved in the discussion of 12 CP, 1 CP, I don't know that I think that's a good idea. I think that we would come back with 12 CP. I think for North Dakota, we're different. So then how do you do that balance of what's right for North Dakota and hold that position, or do you just forego that position and say, hey, the way we do cost allocation, the way we do the peaks is just like transmission planning, where we're going to get together as a region and figure that out. So I think I want to have that issue solved in this rate case before I make a decision. And I know you talked about 1983, but in 1983, did states have renewable portfolio standards?
I don't believe so.
They didn't. So the situation in 1983 is probably not applicable to 2014.
Well, I think the investment framework looks very much the same. XL Energy system has always been a heavy energy system, It's not a system where the investment's driven by peaks. Peaks are probably less than 5% of our cost. And so when you look at how the system cost should be allocated, looking at more hours than one is always more accurate, and accuracy is a principle that this commission has relied on.
Sure.
And other commissions as well. And so I do...
You're not going to give that point away that quick.
I do believe it it is a more accurate method than the 1CP.
Okay, and just a couple other general questions. The let me look at my notes here. Oh, the Fukushima plant, that's different than your plants, though.
Yes, but as a result...
The whole design is completely different.
I don't mean to interrupt, but we've got a court reporter today. Very difficult for her to take down when two people are talking at the same time, especially when one of you is talking so fast. So if you could just at least wait and not talk
Thank you,
over
Your Honor.
Each other, please.
I'm sorry.
It's a great exchange.
The Fukushima plant, I understand, is different than your plants.
Certainly there are some design differences, but as a result of that, it's caused NRC to go back and look at some of their processes and procedures and recommend changes in our in operations across the country.
Okay. To get back to the settlement agreement, I was ready to put a vote forward on the wind projects and the gas projects before this settlement agreement came in. That kind of gets put on hold because it doesn't make sense to vote on that as a part of a settlement agreement. If this settlement agreement gets rejected, would your preference be to keep all those in this and keep working the settlement agreement, or to have a vote on those individual projects?
I guess, Commissioner, if the settlement was rejected, we would take the reasons for the rejection back and consider those together with how to best go forward.
Is there a reason that you would like a decision on the wind farms and the gas earlier than later?
Well, having information earlier is always more helpful, but it's most helpful always to get the right decision or the most informed decision as we do our planning.
Okay. And then back to Commissioner Fedorchuk talked about this quite a bit, and Ilana a little bit, the 5550. Explain to me again why it can't be 10000. I didn't understand your logic.
Well, certainly.
If you know how much money you need in this period, if you collect it early.
Well, what we're doing here is trying to match our costs and our revenues. I mean, we're evaluated. We do financing. We do our planning by annual periods. And so what we have in front of us is an agreement that allows us to earn a reasonable return or something approaching that in each of these periods. Now, you know, if we were to recognize, for example, all of the earnings in year one and no earnings in year three, obviously our financial position in year three is significantly degraded. We don't have the ability to say...
I don't think I understand that, why you're saying it's degraded in year three when you've already collected
the
revenue.
If we were to earn everything in year one, in year three we'd have a 0% rate of return. And that would be, you know, certainly unacceptable to an investment community. For example, if we were to sell bonds or sell equity, and we had a zero rate of return, I mean, we wouldn't meet our required credit metrics.
Okay, I'll talk more about that in the work session with my folks. I think.
Okay.
I think that might be it, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Christman.
Well, just to start, Your Honor, with where we left off, it's set for in the opposite direction. Instead of a big amount at the beginning and then a string of zeros, I guess I'm thinking that a more appropriate method is, and I don't know the exact number, something less than five that gets you to the same amount, but in four even increases. What would you say to your customers when they say you're just doing your financing on our backs, interest free? You're taking our money in advance so you can do all your projects and get this all out of the way, and we're financing for you.
Well, I hope the customers would understand that the investments we're making are very much on their behalf, very, very much on their behalf. I mean, what we've got is a system with very high reliability. It's less than the national average in cost. It's operated on a very environmentally sound manner. There's great value in the investments we're making. Those nuclear plants, for example, have been wonderful performers over the years. I think they would be the envy of any utility to have those facilities. And I hope customers that looked into this would be proud that we life extended them.
Well, having those facilities might be the envy, but all the additional responsibilities that have been tagged onto you so you can keep them running, I'm not sure is exactly the envy of every other company. But North Dakota ratepayers being a rather small part of your company as a whole, though, if they are paying at the increases at 4 or 4.5% or whatever it would be in four equal payments, are you suggesting that your costs are calculated out that precisely, that's going to throw your financing off if it comes in four equal payments or four equal increases instead of three?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over. What I'm saying is why it's not, why we wouldn't encourage to, for example, earn all of our return in 1 year versus meeting our return every year. As to whether it would impact us in any particular year as a result of what happened in North Dakota, we'd have to take a look at that.
Does it not kind of defy logic to think that there's not going to be any inflation or anything in the fourth year, and so that some of this increase is actually needed for the fourth year, not the first three?
Well, in fact, revenues we'll earn in year three will also earn in year four.
But the fourth year most likely would have some inflationary increases, and yet you will not be getting any increase. And so is it not illogical to assume that there's going to be some increase in your costs in the fourth year?
Yes, there will be some increase in costs, and that's why we're earning a much lower rate of return.
But you're getting it from the customers in advance to cover that expected inflationary increase?
Now, what we're doing is over time we're matching investments in revenue. So we're earning, with the 3-5% increases, 9.75, and I think it goes to 10.25. And what's happening is when those rate increases drop off, so does our return.
Is one of the goals of the 5550 increase model to, at the end of this settlement, to have a nice opening to the dialogue that, oh, gosh, we have not had a raise all last year, so we're really due here?
If I understand the question, I think what we're seeing is post 2016, we've kind of cut through this investment cycle. Our revenue requirement needs drop pretty significantly, and that we should see only rate increases consistent with the level of inflation.
Historically, with your long service to the company, do you really believe that in the fourth year the investment is going to drop that much, or is the first three just what's clearly on the picture but 4 years out? Really, who knows?
No, our I think our revenue requirement model suggests a lower revenue requirement. There's a lot of indications of that. For example, in Minnesota, I think where we've submitted some information in that regard showing post 2016 our revenue requirement models tell us that rate increases should be much closer to the level of inflation. We've completed the upgrade and repowering of our nuclear plants. We've made some significant investments at that point in Sherco. We'll have gotten most of the plant in service from our transmission projects in place by the end of 2016. So a lot of the infrastructure improvements underway will have been completed. I mean, there really, I can't think of another project of that magnitude post 2016 at this point, other than some transmission, but nothing of the magnitude of CapEx.
Do you understand why I'm skeptical that investment plan is, that investment forecast, let's say, is going to be very accurate 4 years out, when a little over a year ago you went to market looking for 150 or 200 megawatts of wind and found that it was on sale and want to come home with 750? I mean, that's a pretty big change in plans in 1 year, much less 4 years.
I do not think that should cause you to be skeptical. My belief is that you would expect any time we can save our customers money by making an investment that we go ahead and do that to the extent reasonably possible.
Okay. I'm going to kind of paraphrase something that you said earlier, so I'm
sure.
Wondering if this is accurate. When
right.
Commissioner Kalk was talking about the wind and gas projects,
yes.
You said something to the effect that getting the information earlier is always better than later, but the right information is the most important thing?
Yes, I think that's a correct paraphrase.
Doesn't that completely fly in the face of what we're talking about doing as far as figuring out a demand allocator, where in this case now we're going to make our decision and then get the information later but agree not to take it into consideration for 4 years when it's fairly outdated again?
Commissioner, I think the base to which you apply that is considerably different. I guess it's my recollection that this issue has been before this commission at least seven times during my tenure. Over that period of time, several commission witnesses themselves have recanted their position in that regard. I've never seen any credible case for a 1CP made before this commission in all candor. And I've worked with many commission staff people over the years, including Dr. Dobish and others who have come to a 12CP conclusion. So I think you have the right information before you. I certainly understand the commission wanting to do a deeper dive, take another look, anticipate possible changes over time. But I believe you have a solid record with a 12CP before this commission.
You seem very confident that what we're doing here is the right allocation method. So are we just kind of blowing the ratepayers' money doing this study?
Well, I think that certainly looking at allocations is something that all commissions do from time to time. Rate cases don't afford typically a time frame to take a look at them. Certainly, this is a good opportunity to do this. If this is a concern of the commission looking over the long term, certainly the incremental cost is not too significant or significant enough to outweigh that interest. At the same time, I think the commission has a very solid record before it to approve the 12CP in this settlement.
Okay. Thank you. I have no other questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Fedorchak.
Mr. Sparby, I neglected to ask you about some two of the things that are also big components of this, so I wanted to circle back, if I may. I'm interested in getting your thoughts on this proposal to sort of create a North Dakota generation mix or our restacking of what we count for our customers. Just talk to me about any thoughts you have on that, and concerns, opportunities, benefits. Why should we do that? What do you see as the benefit for us, and the how that works with your company, risks, all of that?
Sure. Well, I think it's been a longstanding interest of this company to have the generation portfolio stacked in a manner that's more consistent with North Dakota energy policy. The process that we've laid out here is the one that the parties have concluded best gets at that. It provides we work with staff to come to that conclusion. There's some time frames, and it includes a default provision that if we can't come to any other negotiated conclusion, that these purchase power agreements or the agreements attached would drop off. And if we do come to agreement, it must be approved by the commission.
Is this a necessary tool to do that, or could we not, through rate cases, be disallowing some of these things that we don't like some of the projects in certain I forget what they're called, CBD or those.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what the I'd have to look at the statutory scope of your rate cases and you know what's included in the record of those. Mm-hmm. But the intent here was to provide a process that specifically was able to get at the commission's concerns about our generation portfolio here, and I think it's a pretty good process.
Do you have concerns from an operational standpoint about how that's going to work? Or will you have stranded investments?
Well, certainly we've got to recover the cost from other jurisdictions, or we have to accept a lower return overall. So certainly there's financial risk on the company here.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then also your thoughts on committing to the North Dakota generation. You know, is that something you've done in other jurisdictions, committing to build something in a place?
I don't recall that we've ever committed to that in other jurisdictions.
Do you have concerns about that as a precedent? How will that work its way out? You know?
I believe this commission and others are certainly reasonable about this. I don't necessarily see this spreading to other jurisdictions, and I'm comfortable with the commitment that we made.
Okay. And then just to circle back for a minute on the 5550, if I'm understanding you correctly, if you were to do like 10 and 0000 or if you were to go along 15, which is what you can front-end it, what you're saying is you'd have too much revenue in year one, and what would you'd have no way to bank that and use that.
Yes.
Is that correct? You have no way to bank that kind of thing?
Right. And we have people here that have a much greater understanding of GAAP.
I don't need technical, just like the basics.
Everybody here probably has a better understanding of GAAP accounting than myself. But yes, we have to record earnings in the period in which we receive them.
And then because of the revenue sharing agreement that's also part of this, if you were to over-earn, would you not be returning half of those back?
We would return half of it back, yes.
Okay. So that would be another additional complication to reshaping it that way.
You're correct in that this – we would have to rethink that part of the agreement, because right now anything over that allowed rate of return, we return half of that back to customers.
Okay. And then just to follow up a little bit on Commissioner Christman's questions, in 2016, the company, the way I view this is you're investing, 2013, 2014, 2015, your investment cycle is you anticipate done in 2016. So it's sort of similar to not to the years in between rate cases where you don't come back for rate increases. You've got what you need. You just continue on with the revenue structure that you
Correct.
Is in place. The only thing that would change that is if you have additional investments, larger investments, that you don't have in rate base that you haven't anticipated needing.
As a general rule, unless sales fall off or, you know, something else unanticipated happens, mm-hmm. yes, that's true.
Do you also anticipate that perhaps sales will increase by then? Do you look that far in advance in sales forecasts?
That's a great question. You know, certainly I think sales would get come back a little bit, but, you know, in North Dakota, like Minnesota, where we have service territories, a lot of the comeback will be in areas that we don't serve. Typically, we're surrounded by co-ops, so a lot of new developments aren't in our service territory. So we'll see some growth, but it won't be the kind of, I don't expect it to be, the explosive growth that we might have seen in our service territories in the past. But this is certainly an area where Mr. Cedarquist could speak very informatively.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sparby. That's all my questions.
Your Honor, I had two if I could.
Yes, Chairman Calk.
Thank you, Dave. Round two, huh? I forgot to ask the question, and Commissioner Fedorchak brought it up a little bit, but the, you know, the commitment of the company to develop up to 400 megawatts of thermal generation no later than 2036,
yes.
as long as it's cost-effective, after taking into account the benefits of locating generation nearer to North Dakota, hasn't the company made previous commitments to build generation in North Dakota and then never got followed through on? What's the hook that this commission would have that if you never build anything?
Commissioner, this commission has the authority to enforce this. This agreement is, if accepted and adopted by the commission, you know, is a binding agreement amongst the parties, and this commission has the authority to enforce it.
Okay, well, how do I enforce it? I tell you to build it, and you say no. What do I do?
Well, I don't want to get into the...
No, but I do.
Let me speculate then. Typically, a commission would show a show cause order to enforce an agreement like this. I mean, maybe I can defer to Ms. Valley or Mr. Simpson.
I mean,
once again, the recorder is here. I think if that's
Mr. Simpson, just wait. I'm going to give you a chance to.
I think that'd be something that a witness can get on the stand and talk about, not the attorney talking to me. That's
all.
So if you're not the right person for that, but somebody needs to answer that question, how that would practically work on the ground.
Commissioner Calk, we can certainly get into that. It is fundamentally a legal question about this commission's enforcement authority, what its statutory authority is to enforce its orders. I think, as Mr. Sparby just said, we certainly view that if the commission adopts the settlement, it will be enforceable as an order of this commission and subject to all of your enforcement authorities, civil penalties, criminal penalties, and those sorts of things. And so we did contemplate that, but it is really a legal issue. We can get a witness, but I don't know that we have one here prepared here today. If we want to discuss this, we can also, you know, discuss this with your staff attorneys and other staff about the scope of the commission's enforcement authority.
Well, what I had envisioned is something the company offers up in their settlement agreement that says, if we don't do this, we will do this. So it doesn't have to go to that route of, we fine people for call before you dig, and they don't pay us, and it goes nowhere, because it doesn't end up working through the legal process to actually go after them. That there would be something in an agreement that would say, we're going to build this by a certain year, or we will, almost like a self-penalty. So we can defer that, I guess, to the work session. But that was one question I forgot the first time. If I had just one follow-up, when you were talking with Commissioner Chrisman about the 12CP discussion, I was stunned with your answer back. I think Commissioner Chrisman was right. It sounds to me like you're adamantly convinced that 12CP is the right number. So why would you even look at a study? If the head of the company says he's absolutely convinced the study is going to come back saying 12CP is the correct method. That's a perception that certainly was put out there.
No, Commissioner.
The way I perceived it.
I'm sorry. If I conveyed that, I didn't intend to. What I intended to convey was certainly there is sufficient commission precedent and a record in this case to conclude 12CP is a reasonable basis for this settlement.
Okay. There's also, I don't share that feeling, and that's why we're here, I think, today. We have staff working papers that have developed as this issue's become bigger that are not yet in the record. And, you know, maybe it is time that we enter those staff working papers in this and we take it all the way to the North Dakota Supreme Court to get this issue settled once and for all, because I think this will become it is a big issue.
Yes.
It obviously has been an issue.
Yes.
And I'm talking with general counsel. It doesn't appear we can ever point back to a really good point that says, yes, this issue's absolutely settled. So I just throw that out there for general discussion. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Christman, do you have anything else?
I do, Your Honor. Getting back to the discussion, and not the legal question that Mr. Kalk was talking about, but as far as the enforceability of a plan to build something in 20 years, if you chose to want to do that or to not want to do that in the future, wouldn't that be part of a case that you would bring to the commission? And regardless whether we had taken a proactive approach and built it into the plan now, in which case if you didn't want to do it, you would just come to the whatever commission is sitting here somewhere between now and then and say, well, this isn't going to work for us. And you just as easily, if you're willing to build it, could come to a future commission when the time is closer and say, we're looking for an ADP to build this. So really what we do now on that regard, besides just being kind of a strategic plan for the future, do you see that it holds any real final authority?
Commissioner, absolutely. It's a binding, enforceable order by the within the authority of the commission. I expect the commission to have regular updates, maybe annual updates, taking a look at this, seeing how we're doing. I'm not aware of us submitting a binding, enforceable agreement like this here before or in any other jurisdiction. So I do think it has meaning.
And then getting back to the annual increases.
Yes, sir.
Whether it were 3-5% increases and a 0 or 4 increases of the same amount that gives the company the same return. Is there any precedent, either with NSP or other companies that you're aware of, when you have these cases that involve future rate increases and a current refund for, I don't know if it's called the overcharge that we've had during 2013 here and with the interim rates, where there's going to be a refund, is there any precedent for just mixing that refund or subtracting that refund from the future rate increases?
Sure. And I don't want to suggest we can't reshape the 555. I mean, if you want us to go back and, you know, look at some kind of something going the other way or more front-loaded, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what the, you know, at extremes it becomes a bit of an issue. But I don't want to suggest we won't go back and look at that. And if you'd rather start out at 4 and end up with 6 or something like that, I mean, we'll certainly go back and take a look at that and see. We'd have to, of course, come to agreement with staff. But if that's the commission's request, we came to what we thought was the best possible agreement. If there's something else you request we look at, we'll go back and do that.
But maybe I shouldn't have used either option as part of the question, so that, because I think the question got lost in that. Let's just base everything on the 5550.
Yes.
Would there be precedent for doing three annual increases of some smaller amount and not doing the refund now for the interim rates?
Yes.
That's been done before in some cases?
I can't think of where it's been done before, but I'm sure we can take a look at that.
There'd be no legal issues or anything?
Nothing here, but I'd like the opportunity to consult with. Okay.
I'm going to jump in here because I'm sitting here. I'm thinking we're probably due for a break anyway, but just some thoughts that I have. You know, since what we're really talking about is a comprehensive settlement agreement and hashing out a settlement agreement today, and there's so much involved, and I get the sense that there's been a great deal of work put into this already and a great deal of agreement, and there's some sticking points that maybe need to be worked out. What I would suggest is that we take a little break right now, and instead of just 5 minutes, let's come back on the hour. And that would give you an opportunity to talk to your people and maybe a chance for the attorneys to confer and see if there are some areas of agreement that are possible here before we go back on the record. So, Mr. Fedorchik.
I would, before we lose Mr. Sparby.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is Mr. Sparby would still be on the stand when we come back. I think maybe his attorneys and counsel may have some more questions for him, too. So I'm just thinking we take a break here and come back with Mr. Sparby. If you want to ask him a question before
I think
the break.
We're close to being done with Mr. Sparby personally.
Yeah, see, I think we're going to have quite a few more. So let's take a 10-minute break.
Okay.
And then we can go back.
Race to the bathroom.
How's that, Randy? Is that a hot thing?
Oh, much not for you. That's all I'm going to ask. That's all I'm
Yeah.